the way I see it is that sound is a nourishing element, and it is there not only as a byproduct of activities, it is there to serve as a nourishing element. And nature provides us with all sorts of nourishment in various forms. It gives us water, it gives us minerals, it gives us food and air to breathe, and it gives us sound. Certain natural sounds that nature provides are as nourishing as water or oxygen or any kind of mineral, you know, and everything we eat from nature. It provides the same kind of nourishment. And so I became very interested in the relationship we have biologically as human beings and with sound, with the sound that nature creates. And my idea at this point, that I've just come up with this thought, that everything that makes sound, every sound that exists on the planet, creates a layer. And I use the word phonosphere. Phonos means sound. The same way we call atmosphere the yes. sum of gases, or hydrosphere the amount of water on the planet, we can think of the totality of sounds as a phonosphere.
Lovely, yes.
Hi, this is Bruce Lipton, and you're listening to Green Planet FM.
Kia ora, greetings, and welcome to Green Planet FM 104.6. I'm Tim Lynch, and I trust that you are doing well. I invite you to stay with me over the next hour as we discuss and find ways to take care of our unique and magnificent green planet Earth.
This garden universe vibrates complete. Some make it a sound so sweet. Vibrations reach on up to become light, and then through gamma out of sight. Between the eyes and ears there lie the sounds of color and the light of a star. And to hear the sun, what a thing to believe, but it's all around if we could but perceive. To know ultraviolet, infrared and x-rays, beauty to find in so many ways. Two notes of the chord, that's our full scope. But to reach the chord is our life's hope. And to name the chord is important to some. So they give it a word, and the word is...
In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God. And as the greatest story of Judaism, Christianity, and Islam says, the Word was with God, and the Word was God. And in this profound creation story, a vibration made itself known. Science is belatedly catching up, stating that there was a Big Bang, when the greatest vibration ever burst into being. And when we speak words, our first utterance has our vocal cords vibrating the air that comes out of our mouth as words. In the beginning was the Word. So vibration is very much a part of the way our universe came into being, and also how this message has been carried onward, even to you, dear listener, even today. Many years ago, spiritual scientists were able to show that sound can affect matter, and that by placing a handful of flour on a plate of glass that was about half a square meter, and then running up the edge of it with a violin bow, they noticed certain nodal patterns emerge. Evidently, Galileo was aware of this from his time in the 1600s, and this has been continued by the theosophists in the 19th century, and Rudolf Steiner's anthroposophists in the early 20th century. Many experiences even showed that liquid could burst out of a pool of liquid when sound was involved, which showed that form could come into being and that standing patterns have been shown to mimic geometric patterns in flowers and plants and even the shapes of jellyfish. So the importance is to realize that we are totally surrounded by not only beauty and magnificence, but of so much more that is unseen. In the studio this morning, I have Simone Vitali, who has come from Tauranga, who originally comes from Rome, where he took his first breath. And he is a sound healer, teacher, and practitioner, plus a musician and composer. And so I wish to say welcome. Thank you for driving from Tauranga in the Bay of Plenty to present yourself to New Zealanders.
Thank you, Tim. I'm really happy to be here.
Well, thank you. Yes, it's all about vibes. It's all about vibes. And when we really get to the core of existence, it's still about vibes. So how did you come into being involved in sound and music, Simone?
It happened very naturally for me. It happened when I was very young at school, and I started playing music with some of my friends, some of my schoolmates. And that's how it started. So it really was simply about playing music and having fun. Very young, I was around 12 years old. And then it became more and more serious and more professional. And I became a professional musician. I started composing my own music. And years later, I started working in a recording studio. So I'm also a sound engineer. And that gave me really a lot of experience in all the processes of music production, from the first idea to the last mix that people can listen to. And after that, I think it was around the year 2002, 2003, things started changing a little bit for me, so I became more interested in spirituality, meditation, and all these things, and sound naturally moved in that direction as well with me. So my music moved more in the direction of healing music, and I became very, very fascinated by the healing qualities of sound.
Well, we are completely surrounded by sound all day, and the dawn chorus every morning allows us to really feel the imprint of birds when they sing. Unfortunately, we are encapsulated in buildings and behind glass and walls, and we don't hear that sound. But when we're out in the bush or out in a forest somewhere, that sound can go right through you. I know, particularly the bellbird and even the tui here in this country, this sound is just profound. It's like a tattooing on your being. And you've been involved in all sorts of sound in relationship to nature.
Yeah.
Can you share with our audience, please?
Well, it's important what you said, that we are built, we are wired to absorb certain sounds, and the morning chorus of birds is an important element. And more often than not, if we live in a city, our morning song is traffic, you know, when we start hearing the cars driving by, and that's not exactly what we are built for. So the way I see it is that sound is a nourishing element, and it is there not only as a byproduct of activities, it is there to serve as a nourishing element. And nature provides us with all sorts of nourishment in various forms. It gives us water, it gives us minerals, it gives us food and air to breathe. And it gives us sound. Certain natural sounds that nature provides are as nourishing as water or oxygen or any kind of mineral, you know, and everything we eat from nature. It provides the same kind of nourishment. And so I became very interested in the relationship we have biologically as human beings and with sound, with the sound that nature creates. And my idea at this point, that I've just come up with this thought, that everything that makes sound, every sound that exists on the planet, creates a layer. And I use the word phonosphere. Phonos means sound. The same way we call atmosphere the sum of gases, or hydrosphere the amount of water on the planet, we can think of the totality of sounds as a phonosphere.
Lovely, yes.
And we exist in this element of sound, and therefore we are nourished by it, and we contribute to this because we make sounds all the time. So in a natural environment, or in a more natural way of living, we produce organic sounds, the same way that birds do, the same way that the wind and the water do. And what we are doing now, since, let's say, maybe the Industrial Revolution, you know, was the start of it.
That's right.
We started producing non-organic sounds. Like, I haven't come up with a proper definition, so I just say non-organic, and I might think of a better one at some point, that do not really fit the environment in a nourishing way, let's put it like that. So many of the sounds that result from our activities are not nourishing. Actually, they are depleting.
Like static.
like static, like any sounds of machinery, like any buzz or hum of electricity.
Sirens.
Yes. Anything, really. Yes. And so there's a difference. There's a sound that nourishes, and there's a sound that takes energy from you, depletes energy. And you can compare that to food. You know, there's food that nourishes you and gives you energy. And then there's food that doesn't really nourish you, fills your stomach, doesn't nourish you, and in the end it takes energy because you spend your energy to process that food, but you don't get nourishing from it.
So that's industrial factory food of the Industrial Revolution, too?
Yeah, anything that is not nourishing, so processed food, you know, excessively processed food and things with a lot of additives and stuff like that, you know. Just think of, you know, the difference between a sandwich or a packaged sweet donut like that and a bowl of salad or fresh fish or
mangoes,
fruit, you know, fruit and stuff like that. I mean, the nutritional value is completely different, but you still spend energy processing that food that you don't get nourishing out of it. And also it often contains, when it's highly processed, it also contains elements that are actually toxic. So sound can be toxic as well. So air can be toxic when we pollute the air. Yes. Water can be toxic when we pollute the water. And sound can be toxic when we pollute the sound with these unnourishing sounds emissions.
Yes, I hear you. When orchestras came to Europe 500 years ago, and you had violins and you had the emerging of woodwind and what do you call it, brass, and everything started to come together. All the music in those days was essentially the harmonies of life, because it was, I guess, first time that really music could be heard by people in a large context. And all the composers of those days wanted to offer their gifts to the world. And I guess that's where the big music started. Of course, when you go back into drumming, into the Neolithic age or times like that, the sounds came through as more of a beat, whereas I guess with the higher notes coming in with orchestrals and violins, it often stretched the spectrum a lot more, didn't it?
Yeah. Obviously, the origin and the function of music are highly debated.
Okay.
So there's not a lot of agreement on the actual function of music itself. Some people say that it's absolutely necessary for our lives, and some people say it's just something that we do for fun, you know, we could live without it. And I'm talking from an anthropological point of view,
yes.
So how we came to develop music.
Yes.
Obviously, there's a more primitive form of music, which, you know, like you just said, the drumming and trance-like tribal things that we have been doing for millions of years.
Yes.
And that has a trance component that helps people to get into certain states of mind. And it's very simple. Normally, it's just often just a beat, because it resembles very intimate processes like the heartbeat and internal rhythms. And it has an effect depending on the kind of rhythm and depending on the speed of the rhythm. It has effects on the brain and the brain waves activity, and it changes it, and therefore it has an effect on the state of mind. But then when it comes to orchestral music and modern music, it's good to remember that it all started very often, and in most cases it was sacred music. So music was founded by the church, and so it was supposed to help people to get a feeling and some kind of communion, feeling of communion with the divine. And then it became more and more independent from that, and then a king started also having their composers to create a certain ambience. But there was often, in these ancient times, there was still an understanding of the function of music. So, for example, if a king would hire a musician, which at that time was not so much of an artist, but really like it was a craft. Like, I hire a carpenter because I need a table. I hire a musician because he has the skills. He knows, you know, how to craft music. And this idea of the artist came a little bit later. It was more a romantic idea that came later. And musicians used to be hired for their skills to provide certain, maybe for relaxations or to create a harmony harmonious
ambience.
Yeah. And so there was an idea that music has an effect. And I mean, we're talking about Europe and orchestral music in Europe, but for example, in China,
yes,
you know, which has a much more ancient music tradition as well as India, you know, music was very almost scientifically used. They have very complex musical systems and they have different scales. They have different effects on people's biological processes and emotional states. And they used to use this music very, very precisely for certain outcomes. And then at some point, the whole thing became more independent, and then the artist came out and music became an art form and also became the form of self-expression, and which step by step slowly led to music as we know it today, which is mainly an artistic act and mainly an act of self-expression of the artist who makes the music. It has made music into something very, very individual, very personal, and maybe in most cases, not all cases, of course, there are some really great artists and musicians and composers that are really devoted to using music in a
healing,
but also just, you know, as a social tool, that they are aware of their responsibility.
Yes.
But otherwise, music, let's say in the more consumerism side of music, is just like packaged food.
Yes.
So it's not really nourishing, and it's just made to sell a product. And it's enjoyable, of course, you know, because we all enjoy music. It's just that we are constantly bombarded by music, you know, and also when it's not requested. And that's mainly the part that I normally question more. Do I need to hear music that I don't want to listen to in a certain time just because maybe I'm walking into a shop because I need to buy something at that moment? Do I need to have that music as a background, you know?
It's called wallpaper music?
Yeah, and of course there's a lot of studies. The reason why they use music in shops is because apparently it's manipulative, you know? It creates a certain state, and they have done a lot of experiments and studies that certain kind of music makes you buy more and blah, blah, blah. But yeah, it's all about selling something, you know? It's really not about nourishing. It's about selling something.
Yeah, because in America, then you have what you call black soul music, where as a result of slavery, a lot of the blacks sung songs that had really, really deep meaning to them. One major one was because they didn't have freedom, but
yeah,
the word soul was dropped into the music world, for want of a better word, and it was a real deeper connection to one's being.
Yeah.
Can you sort of add to that, or is it part of the process of humanity learning how to use both sound, singing and instrumentals to express their deeper feelings?
Yeah, and singing together is, you know, we do a lot of studies nowadays. We like to study things, you know. People like to do scientific studies on all sorts of things. So they have been studying that singing together is very healing, you know. It helps building a sense of community, because, I mean, that's generally what happens when you do things in a group. But if you add music and you sing together, apparently the bonding is much deeper and much quicker. And so I can imagine, you know, these people, these slaves in doing their work and obviously crying for the freedom that has been taken from them. They just used to sing all together. It gave them strength to keep doing this work that they were forced to do, and it kept connecting them with something bigger, with their soul. That's why they call it soul music, because their body was stuck, their bodies were stuck in a situation that they couldn't control, but their soul could still lift higher thanks to singing and music. And I think they used that to keep their spirit high in the most terrible circumstances. And that's one of the many powers of music, of course.
That's wonderful, yes. When the missionaries came to the Pacific, one of the things that they did do when they went to all the Pacific Islands, they, in their wanting to get the so-called First Peoples of all these islands to take on Christianity, they got them singing. And the singing was very uplifting as well, and it made a lot of singers happy. And this is where the heart component comes out. When you really are happy singing, you can actually feel your heart.
Yeah, I mean, if you talk about missionaries, obviously it's very delicate.
It is.
It's so, but yeah, obviously the component of music itself is great, and it can bring people together in a very special way. But again, it can be also a manipulative use. So it is manipulative in supermarkets, and I guess it was probably manipulative also in the case of the missionaries.
Oh, yes, most definitely. Yeah. Because it means that a lot of the indigenous songs of the past were essentially pushed out the back and forgotten.
Yeah.
And so this is a very important thing, Simone. Yes, well, I've come across a whole lot of different uses of sound, and there was a situation where I had in the studio here in Auckland a person called J.J. Hertak. He was a Jewish scholar who wrote the book Keys to Enoch, and he took a group of people to the Great Pyramid of Cheops in Egypt, and they went into the main gallery, and it was all dark, and they started to chant. I don't know exactly what they chanted, but they chanted and chanted and chanted, and after 20 minutes, the darkness of that whole gallery turned to light, and it vibrated so high that they could actually see themselves chanting. And this is going way back, because you go back through Buddhism, Hinduism, and there's the chanting that's always been there. And I just find that quite profound, that we can vibrate ourselves. And it's really interesting, because the Moody Blues back in 1968 said, "Vibrations reach on up to become light, then through gamma out of sight." And it goes on, and there's a whole little story around it, that we actually live in a garden universe that vibrates complete. And we can turn into this magnificent garden of existence. And in many ways today, other than within certain artistic fields, and the commercial dominance of sound has allowed us to not remember that we live in this vibrational world, that you and I are both energy beings, and we all oscillate at a particular frequency. And essentially every baby born into this realm is a vibrating baby, and the whole universe vibrates too. We all have this, we can all tune in to something greater. And with your expression as an artist and as a sound healer, you go about taking people and bringing them into alignment, for want of a better word.
Yeah, I think that's a really good word, alignment. And it is a lot about noise, you know? It's a lot about what prevents us from not feeling that alignment to the essence of life often in our lives. What is, and we can really see there's noise. You're trying to listen to something and there's a lot of noise around you. And noise can be acoustic noise, so now we're talking about sound, and we're talking about, I talked before about noises. But noise, you can use it in a more generic sense. Everything that interferes with a clear connection is noise. So now we are, with microphones, we're recording this conversation. And there's going to be a level of noise in the microphone and in the mixer, and that finally gets to the recording. And when you're recording something, you always want to keep the ratio between the signal and the noise appropriate, because the signal is our voices, and this is what we want people to hear. And we don't want a lot of noise together with our voices. So, you know, the cables of the microphones are made in a way that they don't transport a lot of noise, and the software that you're using to record is made to capture mainly the frequencies of the sound and not noise. And there are filters that you can use to adjust, you know, all this technical stuff. Let's use this as a metaphor of the fact that what is the signal and what is the noise. So you talk about alignment and you talk about feeling this sea of vibes, you call them vibes before, we are immersed in, and that connect us with everything else. And when we have a clear feeling of this connection, when we have a really strong sense that we are connected to everything, and there's, you know, spiritual realm and there's purpose in life, that's signal. That's what I would call signal. Everything that interferes with feeling so connected is noise. So noise is also worrying, having a lot of thoughts. That's mental noise. Or being distracted by so many things around you, like advertisement. One, that's, you know, the main function of advertising is creating noise, because they try to get your attention in the most clear and strong way. So they create noise because they catch your attention, so they distract you for a moment from feeling yourself. And that's the whole mechanism, because obviously if you feel yourself and everything's fine, you don't need so much. But if someone manages to grab your attention and pull your attention away from yourself and your sense of inner being, then they might be able to convince you that you need something else. So that's noise for me. I call that noise. And then, of course, there's actual noise, acoustic noise. So again, if we try to have, now we're sitting in this cozy, quiet room, so we're having a really good exchange. If we were having the same conversation in a crowded pub where there was loud music and people shouting, yes, over, not to, to hear themselves over the music, and this conversation would be much harder, you know? We would have to really be focused on each other to keep the connection and be able to carry on this conversation. And that's a little bit how we navigate through life and in this kind of society that we have created. We go through a lot of noise, and keeping the connection to the essence, it has become active work. Whereas in a natural environment, it would happen more spontaneously, because everything around you is reminding you of that. The shape of things, the color of things, the sound of things in the natural environment remind you of who you are at your essence. In the urban environment, everything is distracting you from your essence. It's creating noise, and that disturbs this connection with your essence.
Is with animals, I'm really interested from the standpoint that wolves can communicate over far greater distances, and we don't really know the full story about that. And elephants can have a rumble that can carry long distance, and sperm whales can, when they're deep down in the lower isotherms of the ocean, they can communicate for thousands of kilometers. It's like the world whale web has been going on for a long time, and it's just, again, all these clicks that go out. And so we are essentially surrounded by all these fantastic animals that are communicating, and our noise of aeroplanes and cars and God knows what else is overruling them. And some years ago they mentioned that TUIs in Auckland were losing a lot of their song solely because of the noise starting up at daybreak as well. And so the animal kingdom is under duress at a lot of levels because of our human industrial ways of life. And so what you're able to do in many cases is to take people away to a quiet place where you can have a studio among nature, and you can allow people to listen to a tuning fork or something like that. Can you just explain a little bit? Because I think this is really important that we've got to realize that we got to immerse ourselves in the richness of nature as against a wall of sound.
Yeah, well, unless I'm running a retreat or doing something very special like that, I normally end up working in the urban environment, because I also think that's important, because that's where people need it the most. So obviously a certain degree of quiet in the room or in the place where I'm working working is necessary, because what I find very powerful is working with sound very gently. Because another consequence of the level of noise that we are always surrounded with is that our deep listening is often not engaged, because there's so much noise that we actually are protecting ourselves from this noise. So we activate all our filters and all our, the capacity of our brains to filter out things that we don't need to listen to, but we still hear them. Sounds, even if you don't notice hearing a sound, you're still hearing that sound, you know, and that's work that the brain does to filter that sound out of your awareness, because you don't need to hear that. And that's a lot of work for the brain. The more sounds you have to cut out of your awareness, the more the brain is working really hard.
Yes.
And because of that, it's like when you go to a concert and there's loud music and then the concert ends and you go out and then suddenly you realize that you can't hear very well. You know?
Experience that, yes.
Yeah, that's called a temporary hearing loss. And then after a couple of hours, everything goes back to normal. That's the effect of the noise. So we are surrounded by a high level of noise so much time of the day that we are in that state. We are in the state where the threshold, we have raised the threshold, so we are not so sensitive to subtleties. We are not so sensitive to hearing subtleties and sound. So I like to work very gently and quietly, because then the nervous system calms down. And the hearing starts opening. The hearing, I don't mean only the in our ears. We hear with the whole body. It's you know.
Thank you. Yes.
Sounds received by the body, by the full body, and then we process them mainly through the ears, and we translate them into what we call sound. But the vibrations actually are reaching the whole body.
Is that holophonic? Holophonic sound? No.
I'm not sure.
Yes.
It's just that the sound is basically vibration in air.
Yes.
And we translate that vibration into a sound in our brain, but the vibration is still reaching also the body. So we hear also through our bodies. So the whole nervous system is impacted by these constant vibrations. And so when we finally create a quiet space and I start working with these very, very delicate soft sounds, then the nervous system is like, finally relaxes, opens up, and you can start absorbing the more subtle, the more delicate and faint qualities of sound that really makes your whole being open up and breathe more deeply. And because otherwise we are constantly in a sort of state of defense from this, and we don't notice it. That's why we accumulate tensions even without noticing it, because. And also loud noises, from a biological point of view, they trigger the stress response, so fight or flight. Yes. Because that's what we are biologically wired to do. Sudden loud noise, danger, equals danger, you know. So, but if there's a sudden loud noise right beside you and you know that it's not dangerous, you're not gonna jump. But still, your nervous system, which is programmed by millions of years of evolution to react as that noise as a danger, is still reacting. Even if in your mind you say, oh yeah, that was door slamming, no problem, there's still gonna be a part in yourself
that, you bet.
Yeah, that's tensing up and looking out for danger, you know.
Yes, in the weekend I had the good fortune to listen to a harp player. And this was a big, lovely harp, which goes back, I don't know how many hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years the harp goes.
Yeah.
Thousands of years. And the music, just the way the chords were played, it sort of let me out. It was like starlight in my being.
Mm.
And they were subtle, yet clear, crystal clear sounds. And I know that when somebody plays just maybe one note, when we're really still, we can travel with that note. Can you explain a little bit more about this? Because I think the resonance of it,
yeah,
of traveling with sound.
Yeah, was it acoustic concert? Like, were you listening to the instrument itself?
Instrument itself, there was no...
That's another important point. Nowadays, we're so used to listening to music, either through recordings, so speakers and headphones, or when we go to concert, still it's more often than not amplified. Even when it's not really necessary, even when the space is really small, it's still quite a habit to use microphones and speakers. And these, obviously, in a big context is okay, because if you go to a stadium and you're on a big concert, yes, that's the only way. But I often try and encourage people and musicians to avoid that when they can, because we lose so much when we have to listen to music through speakers, you know, because there's a transformation process. The sound becomes an electrical signal, and then it's turned into acoustic signal again. And you lose, yes, something in this translation. Whereas when you're just in front of an instrument and someone's playing that instrument, then you receive the direct vibration of the sound from the instrument to your body. And that's a completely different experience. And the reason why I encourage people to have that experience is because it has the same effect I was talking about before. It helps you relaxing and opening up to the subtleties of sound. You know, hearing the sound fading away, you know, how long can you still hear it?
Yes.
You know, if you're relaxed and the environment is quiet, you will still hear that sound for a long time. You know, I used to do this with friends in a studio where I was working in Rome. You know, there was this grand piano, and sometimes we used to spend some time there having chats and jamming and things. And then to people who, whenever we had people who were either not musicians or maybe not so much experience with instruments and things, I would say, just sit there and listen. And then I would play a note on the piano and keep the key down with my finger. And then you would hear the sound fading away and becoming quieter and quieter and quieter and quieter. And then at some point it feels like it's gone. And then I would lift my finger from the key, and then at that point the sound would actually be gone.
Yes.
And then people would surprise, the sound was still there, I couldn't hear it, you know? And that's such a powerful experience. Thinking that the sound is gone, and okay, well, that's gone, I can't hear it anymore. And then I actually lift, so the key comes back up, and the string actually stops vibrating. And then you actually hear that there's more silence, so you were still hearing the sound, but you were not able to recognize it. And that's the level of deep listening that I'm talking to, that we lose with so much noise around us, and that we can still experience when we listen to an acoustic instrument in an acoustic environment. You can become sensitive again to these subtle levels of amplitude and how the sound is touching your body. You know, sound is a way of touching a distance, because if I'm talking to you, you hear my voice through your ears, but the air that I'm moving is also traveling from my body to your body, so I'm actually touching your body with my voice.
Yes.
At this moment.
Yes.
And so sound establishes this connection, you know, it fills the space between us. My sound is now traveling towards your body as you listen to me, you know, to my voice. So I'm filling up the space between us with my voice, and I'm actually touching your body with my voice.
Yeah. And, if we
could actually see it, exactly.
Yes. Yes, well, with indigenous peoples, particularly, say, the Amazonians, there's no external Western industrial sounds. And so everything is still, in many cases. Maybe you'll hear the wings of a bird flying through.
Or a chainsaw cutting out some trees.
Ooh, yeah.
Unfortunately.
But I've sat in situations, not recently, because there's less insects, but I've lain on a hill in long grass on a summer day, and I can hear anything from bees to crickets underneath, and all the insects, particularly sometimes you can trace their movement all around. It's like following a trail in the air around you of all these insects. And again, it just allows you to realize just how marvelous the world that we live in.
Yeah.
And here we are, we lock ourselves down inside an air-conditioned building and miss out from it.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it's so, that is so beautiful, and yet it's disappearing so quickly. Because if you want to experience that fully, that just natural environment, the sound of the natural environment, you only want to experience that, it is so difficult. You know, you go for a walk in the bush and you still hear the traffic, and then you keep walking, finally you get to a point where you can't hear the traffic anymore, and maybe it's a few kilometers, you know, depending on how high and low the hills. And then you're finally, God, yes, this is it, you know? And then there comes an airplane, you know? And of course we can still relax. Of course it's much more relaxing being out there than being in the city. But what I find incredible is that where do we have to go to actually not hear any man-made noise? Where do we have to go? I'm sure that there's an answer. There are places where airplanes don't fly over, you know, and, yes, and things like that. But I think those areas are shrinking, you know. It's becoming less and less places on the planet. And, you know, the ocean. We don't live in the ocean, so we don't think about it. But the ocean is as polluted acoustically as, even more, because sound travels through water farther and faster than through air. And as you were saying before, whales, they can communicate thousands of miles away from each other. And, you know, the people who work in, you know, marine biologists or people who work in the ocean and the study sea life and things like that, if they use underwater microphones, they catch up a lot of noise. That's the reality. And you were saying that the tui birds, you know, is losing some of its songs, and it's happening to a lot of animals, that they have to change their songs and calls that they have established through, you know, hundreds of thousands of years. And if they live close to any human activity, they often have to change. Whales are raising the tones of their songs because of the noise. They can't hear themselves. They can't hear each other, you know, when they communicate in such huge distances. So they have to
shout.
Have to shout. They have to change the pitch of the songs, because then the new pitch is going to be above the frequencies of these low noises of the boats and all this stuff.
It's horrific. I've been lucky, I guess, to swim in water at a beach, and with my head fully immersed in the water, like I've dived down, I hear boats, and I can hear the propeller, like that, and then there's so many different propellers, and then glug, 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 glug of a big ship going past. And I know that the military are using sonar, and they're using all sorts of technologies that they say are really impinging on the very sensitive hearing apparatus of all the whales. And they're talking about maybe the pilot whales are really beaching themselves. There's something really going wrong with them as well, from the standpoint of the fact that they're getting too much, shall I say, static and chaff under the water. And so the whole human race, we've really got to take a deep breath and start considering what are we going to do to bring about the change that needs to happen so that we can clear the vibes. Now, I've got a little piece here that I got this morning. I just did a quick check, and that you can get sound to actually cancel out sound as well. You can, sort of like a nanosecond difference, you can cancel out sound. And if you go up on the web, you can be able to find data on this. And I did actually thought I copied it across. Noise cancellation speakers is a method to reduce or completely cancel out undesirable sound. And there, people want to look at this. So if you've got a motor mower mowing lawns, you can get that same sound, have it a nanosecond out of sync, and supposedly cancel it. Well, I mean, that'd be wonderful if we can do that. We need to be able to get onto you know, get beyond the internal combustion motor. Mm. And so that cuts out a lot of sound. And there's another thing that I quickly looked at, can opera singers really shatter glass of a high note? And I saw a video, and it was a male, and he held up this wine glass, and he had a bit of practice, and then bang, the sound actually shattered it. And so there's another side to the fact that it's sound vibration. I mean, we can go to heavy metal, and I know that there's sometimes I can't go into a place where they're playing heavy metal music because I myself feel that I will shatter.
Mm.
And it's just not good for me.
No.
And so again, we realize that there's this other side, and yet when, like Debussy, I'm a very keen Claude Debussy listener because he used tonal music, and I don't know if you've spent much time with this. He uses sound to create a 3D picture in your mind.
Oh.
And this is some of the magic of some of these wonderful composers of the past, to be able to really show that you can structure sound to soothe our being.
Yeah.
It's quite fascinating, really, isn't
it? Yeah,
it's
the principle of resonance.
Yes.
When a singer shatters a glass, it's because they match the frequency. Every object has a resonant frequency, it's called. So there's one particular frequency, one particular note that that object has within it. If you find that frequency and you can direct that frequency to the object, it reaches a point where the energy accumulates so much that it just breaks. And I believe that music has a subtle resonance as well, because that's just pure energy. When a singer shatters a glass, we're just talking about pure acoustic energy. It's just, you know, power of energy. But music, I believe, has many layers. So obviously there's a component of acoustic energy in music, there's sound moving out, and that sound can be more or less loud. And above that, you have the emotional component and the spiritual component of music, and those will resonate with your emotional level and with your spiritual level. So music is charged, can be charged with emotional content. So it doesn't only have a musical and acoustic content. It's not only the notes, the keys, and the melodies. It is also the energetic and emotional content that can be transferred through music. So a music that disturbs you doesn't have to be loud, you know? And a music that you love, if it's too loud, can disturb you.
Okay, yes.
So you can be disturbed by excessive loudness, and that's just physical pressure that you can't stand. And can be disturbed by an emotional resonance that it doesn't serve you, and it doesn't have to be loud, you know. It can be a music that's playing like at mild volume in the background, and you feel really uncomfortable and you want to listen to it. It's because of the energetic content.
Yes, the energetic content. It's amazing how a person can transform vibrations by putting either the happiness of their heart and the joy, or the heaviness of their heart.
Yeah.
Astonishing.
Yeah.
Yes. So where do you feel sound is going at the moment from a standpoint is that the human race, we've got to come together. We have to solve all the challenges of the global family, because we're in a critical situation, and it doesn't matter if it's ecological, economic, or societal. We realize now, 7.6 billion humans, that we have to, so we say, drop our stuff and realize unity, consciousness, and come together. Sound, I feel, has got a very important part to play.
Yeah. Yeah, I think what I see is that this big growing interest in the field of sound healing is just one of the many expressions of a sort of awakening that it's happening. So it is the equivalent of the organic movement in food, or, you know, eco-building.
Yes.
It is just the equivalent in sound and music. It's the awareness that the way we have been doing things until now has created a lot of damage, and we need to do things differently. So the way we have been using sound until now has created a lot of damage, so we need to start using sound more consciously. And I see it's just a facet in this massive interest and growing movement of sound healing and devotional music and healing music. It is just one part of this shift that we are taking at the moment, of just realizing we need to use things consciously. Whatever we do, we have to do it consciously.
Consciousness and consciously is the major word of the moment. I do agree. We always have to factor our future, our children, into where we're going. And do you see sometimes in the future that there'll be sound temples where people can go into? Because I'm very familiar, at a very, very close friend who was a musician or a sound therapist, and she had a nice Steinway grand piano, and people could come in and just sit or lie down, and she would play music. Mm. And the music would allow them to trigger something in them that allowed them to go back into previous lifetimes. Mm. And each person would go in a different direction, but they'd look at their particular lifetime as a result of the chords that were playing. And it just reminds me, because I just remembered it just now, where we are here at the Planet FM radio station in Unitech, this used to be called the Oakley Asylum. It was a place where we used to have put people away for treatments if they were classified as lunatics, which is a terrible word. And she came here, I don't know, 50 years ago with her piano, and she was taken to a room where there's a lot of these toddlers, little two-year-old or three-year-old babies. And for want of a better word, they were severely damaged, neurologically wise. And they were all just lying there and sitting there. They were virtually all mute, totally all mute. To use a very cruel word, they were vegetables. And then she looked at them, she did a little meditation, and then she started playing music. And every one of those children got up and started swaying and moving around. And all of a sudden, in a sort of like an ecstatic moment, they realized something far, far greater was happening. And they were sort of going into joy. And next minute, a superintendent came around and saw what they were doing. And she said, "Stop that music. Stop that music." And my friend stopped the music. And all those children just slumped down and sat down again. The superintendent came in and said, "Out, out, go, go, go." Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, wow. And just remembered it just then.
So why did she go there in the first place? Was she called to be there?
Then they
realized that it was too much?
What?
It's crazy.
Yeah, well, she's not alive now, but she conveyed the message to me, the story to me, that she found herself. You know, sometimes you can end up going to a place there.
My God.
And as if she was being guided there, and she played the sound to all these dear kiddies, and they all rose.
Wow.
And then she was told, "Don't come back. Yeah, don't come back.
It might be healing for them. Don't come back."
Well, not only that, it showed a whole new realm outside drugs. Yeah. So there's a lot to our world that we don't know. So how would you like to see the world? From a vibrational point of view, Simone?
Well, I don't think I can save the world, but I can definitely do my part.
Yes.
So I consider myself a sort of sound and music activist, if you know.
Yes.
I just like this definition.
Yes.
And some people are actively working to clean the oceans. Some people are actively working to stop big corporations to destroy forests. And I'm doing my little part with sound and music, because sound and music can be so powerful in their gentle way of traveling to the deepest areas of your consciousness, of your being. And I'm happy to do my part to touch that string inside of people, that even if for just a moment they can find that alignment that you talked about in the beginning of this conversation, that suddenly feel that they are not just independent beings, but they are elements, you know, in a bigger organism.
Very true, yeah. For greater organisms, like many ways, we are a conduit between heaven and earth. And if we find ourselves aligning, all sorts of things can happen.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, we're going out of time, but I just want to ask one question. Because you were born in Rome.
Yeah.
And this musician person who allowed these children to rise and dance, she also told me that in the Vatican, down in the bottom in the hidden libraries, they have Egyptian chants that enabled the chanters to eliminate plague, to actually shatter the frequency of plague. And there could be a lot more information that needs to come out.
Yeah.
Yes. Astonishing.
Astonishing. Well, yeah, a lot of precious information has been taken and hidden throughout history. So, and it's all coming out again one way or another, you know. Some people have intuitive downloads of this information and yeah. Other people find actual documents here and there. And so I think it is happening slowly. It is the time, you know. Either we actually do the shift, or we just have to wait for the next round.
Yes, yeah. Well, we trust that we can make this change, because we are the people whom we've been waiting for.
Yeah.
Simone, I'd just like to be able to say that when the Beach Boys brought out their song in 1966, Good Vibrations, the vibrations coming from that sound and the happiness coming from that sound definitely made an effect on me right up until this moment. So I want to say thank you very much. Your website, please?
My website is thesoundhealer.org. My website is thesoundhealer.org.
Simone, thank you very much. A wonderful sharing today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
When I was a kid, when I was around 5, 6 years, 7 years of age, there was a pond that used to fill up with water in autumn and winter and spring, and I'd hear the frogs. Wow, I mean, how many children listen to frogs these days? And especially skylarks. As a child, I used to lie in the long grass on our farm down in Matamata in the Waikato in summer and watch the skylark ascend, singing out the joy of being. Wow. What are the children listening to now? Decide to network. Use every letter you write, every conversation you have, every meeting you attend, every email you send. And remember, even Facebook, to tweet and to express your fundamental beliefs and dreams. Affirm to others the vision of the world you want. Network through thought. Network through action. Network through love. Network through the spirit. You are the center of a network. You are the center of the world. You are a free, immensely powerful source of life and goodness. Affirm it, spread it, radiate it. Think day and night about it, and you will see a miracle happen. The greatness of your own life in a world of big powers, media and monopolies, but of 7.6 billion individuals, networking is the new freedom, the new democracy, a new transparency, and a new form of wholeness and happiness. This originated by Dr. Robert Muller, Chancellor of the World Peace University in Costa Rica, Central America. I invite you to be able to come to greenplanetfm.com to be able to inspire yourself to become the change you want to see in the world.
and become involved in caring for your children and grandchildren's future. We are also on Facebook, on Green Planet FM and ourplanet.org. This is Tim Lynch in the spirit of Aroha, wishing you a wonderful week. We look forward to being with you next week. I say kia kaha and haere rā.